to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deaf, Blind, Pink Puppy and His Family by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's reading with Piglet by Melissa Shapiro. In the last chapter, we learned how Melissa fell in love with birds and began caring for them in her home. She even constructed an aviary for them and was very happy to watch them throughout the day. And now we turn to Chapter 7, Doesn't Piglet Have a Say? Five little puppies dug a hole under the fence and went for a walk in the wide, wide world. This is from The Pokey Little Puppy by Jeanette Sebring Lowry in 1942. April 14th, May 3rd, 2017. For a hot minute, Warren and I had given up in thinking that our best bet would be to place Piglety with someone we knew personally. That way we could see him and check up on his well-being. There was a flaw in that logic, but we went with it anyhow. Sure enough, through a musician friend and professional violinist named Darwin Shen, we connected to another musician friend named Andy Armstrong. He was a concert pianist whose very pregnant wife, Esty, had fallen in love with Piglet on Facebook. After Warren saw Andy one night at a concert I didn't attend, he received an email with a passionate declaration of his wife's desire to adopt our foster puppy. Andy wrote, "Crazy question for you. I was trying to guess how serious Etsy was about Piglet. Turns out she was totally serious. I'm planning a date of surprise things for Esty, like a pottery session in Westport, for the next Saturday. So, outrageous question, mightn't Piglet still be with you in 5 days, and mightn't we stop by to visit for a short while for some time during that day? I'm a bit of a dreamer and can't help fascinating and fantasizing about a scenario where we are the perfect home to give Piglet tons of adult, kitty, and other doggy love, though I am fully prepared to be rejected. You and Melissa know Piglet so well, of course, and you will know what is the perfect life for him." This was charming, of course, and somewhat glamorous, but raised a few red flags. Inviting them to stop by, how could I say no? I let them know in advance that Piggy would need a great deal of attention, and a small child and big dogs, which they already had, were not compatible with such a teensy, disabled dog. The visit ought to have discouraged them, but when Andy and Esty dropped by, all the dogs, including Piglet, were delighted to see them. Led by sweet Susan, they crowded our guests in a swarm of tail-wagging enthusiasm. In my arms, Piglet was on his best behavior. Watching this scene play out put the progress of our household into great perspective. Warren had a theory that Susie's ability to set the tone came from her great aspiration to surround herself with a diverse group of dogs who would be kind and accepting of one another. Somehow Piglet had helped expand the capacity. Zoe had learned to share with me and with Piggy without losing with her own cuteness. Evie and Annie, tentative at first, had stepped up when needed. Evie would goad our foster baby on during our walks, while Annie, shy as she is, would go over to him occasionally to calm his anxiety. Gina had avoided Peggy for weeks, but at one point decided he was fun after all. She understood that she was so much bigger than him, so no matter how rough he tried to play with her, she stayed gentle. Dean was the last holdout, keeping his cool, though not happily, with his only competition for female attention. Still, he detected a note of fear in his foster brother, or a possible threat from another dog or human. If so, Dean would let his barking presence be known. After the dogs said their hellos to the Armstrongs, little Piglet gave them his own very warm greeting. They asked a range of questions as I shared our thoughts on what the ideal Piglet home would be. They were smitten, and Andy followed up the visit with an email of continuing interest, but I knew it wouldn't work. In my emailed response, I went over my concern, including the fact that Piglet would really need one-on-one or one or two small, kind dogs for friendship and snuggling, and that with a baby on the way, I knew their time was going to be limited. In all honesty, I wrote, I greatly appreciate your interest in this very special puppy. I'm having a very hard time even considering handing him over to anyone. But when the right match comes along, hopefully it will be clear and relatively easy for me to give in. 2 years later, Andy offered hearty, belated thanks that I had not given him the go-ahead. This was after he realized the incredible rigors of a newborn baby. But at the time, I asked, was I too harsh, as Warren reread my email the next morning. He said no, then read aloud my lines about my having a hard time even considering handing him over. Warren just looked at me. I know. Gloria has a new candidate who looks like a match, I reminded Warren. Just then, Ellie walked into the kitchen to grab her packed lunch and sensed something was in the air. Mom, Dad, no! It was like she had discovered us having a relapse of some sort. She said a lot of things that made perfect sense to me, all along the lines of, how could you turn down the opportunity to give him a concert pianist and his family? Under her words were loving concern for her parents. She didn't have to say, do you really want to have a severely disabled, hermetically sealed dog to you 24/7? Warren grabbed his stuff for work and followed Ellie toward the door, reassuring her. The rescue group in Georgia has a really promising candidate. They know what they're doing. He said it really loud so I could hear. The minute I loaded up the car for my house calls later that morning, my brain attempted to switch into hyperfocus mode. My four-dog travel crew for this day, Evie, Zoe, Gina, and Piglet, were all in their respective places in their very large Honda, the Odyssey minivan, ready to roll. As I started down our street, the rain began. To my fellow passengers, I announced, well, that's going to make a mess of a traffic. But in a way, I welcomed the rain. I was in the mood for mellow 70s rock, but I settled on some more lively bluegrass. Piglet was making some honking-type barks, and I just wanted to enjoy the music. Think about our next stops, and said loudly to the pink boy, could you keep it down? Then I felt bad. Even if I couldn't say it loud enough, I still felt bad. About to say something apologetic, I realized all of a sudden, oh, he's not barking or whining or screaming. We drove another 10 minutes, not a peep. Was he okay? Had he fallen asleep? At a stoplight, I checked on him. He was awake, alert, along for the ride, and as I told everyone, their job for the day was to visit with some of my favorite clients after my appointments, he seemed ready to do what was asked of him. What a good boy you are, Piglety, I praised him. Of course, I had to tell each of the girls how good they were, too. They were. The rainy drive had been a chance to feel grateful. Fostering Piglet for longer than expected had taught me so much. We would be fine letting him go. We would be. We had to be. For no obvious reason, it was then that a memory popped into my head of an incident that took place when I was in vet school when I volunteered to decorate the bulletin boards at the Tipperonough County Humane Society with information about spaying and neutering dogs and cats. Vet students like me routinely volunteered there in Lafayette to do exams on shelter animals, and while I was there, I was sure my mother's teacher's influence had something to do with my needing to fix up the bulletin boards and the colorful, attractive, informative posters. This was early practice for later jazzing up my kids' school poster projects. At the time, the pet overpopulation was exponentially worse than it is today, a change that happened in large part thanks to organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, Friends of Animals, and PetFinder.com. Wanting to help, I was there stapling my colorful display outlining the benefits of spaying and neutering dogs and cats onto the bulletin board in a rather dreary but clean entry area when an older, short, stocky, balding man came in with a beagle. My attention was drawn to this good-looking, healthy, reasonably well-behaved dog, who it became immediately clear was being dumped at the shelter for no apparent rational reason. That powerless feeling I had of not being able to help was a heart-wrenching experience that I still think about and that it still makes me cry decades later. Dumping any animal that has been a family member at a kill shelter is beyond my wildest imagination. The man brought the sweet dog up to the desk, and as he handed her over, he said quickly, "My grandson would kill me if he knew I was doing this." Too upset to say much longer, I finished quickly, ran out sobbing, grabbed my bike, a light blue Schwinn Continental that I used for transportation in those days, jumped on it, and sped off. Distraught as I was, I kept an eye on the road, but as I was riding down a long hill that ran down the middle of Lafayette, where there were cars parallel parked along the side, I didn't notice the door of a white Camaro opening right in front of me. Though at the last second I swerved to avoid hitting it head on, I did hit the edge of the door and literally went flying into the middle of the street. Landing in a heap tangled in the bike frame, I looked back with a relief to see there were no cars barreling down the hill toward me. In an oddly vivid moment, I watched as the driver, a young woman with long dark hair, pulled back, who was dressed in a short skirt, boots, and short fur coat of some sort, approached me. "Are you okay?" "Yes," I said, trying to be calm, as I struggled to untangle myself from my bike. Relieved, she turned and walked away, muttering a barely audible, "Sorry." Zero empathy, just like the man who was getting rid of a dog whose future would be completely uncertain. Not a shred of compassion. The bike was a wreck, but I was able to get it fixed at a nearby bicycle shop. It lived, and so did I, despite a badly banged-up leg. The experience had sharpened my belief about living up to our responsibilities to the animals we bring into our homes, keeping our promise to love and protect them as we best can. Happily, that facility later became a no-kill shelter and was taken over by the nonprofit called Almost Home Humane Society. The memory reminded me that while I had lived up to my promise to foster Piglet and had helped turn a screaming, anxious, needy puppy into a much calmer, loving, amazingly adaptable dog with rapidly improving coping skills, it was critical that we find him a committed, forever family soon. It was essential that such a family appreciate him for the wonderful, quirky character that he was emerging and who would be there to help him thrive as he grew out of his puppyhood and into his full-fledged dog that he would eventually become. As I reviewed our destinations for the day, I paused to appreciate the evolution of my practice. House calls are a naturally good alternative for a wide variety of range of veterinarians, but in home care is particularly well suited for older pets. From the start of my career, I'd always enjoyed working with elderly dogs and cats, so much so that in 2014 I created Your Senior Pets Vets, a subdivision within Visiting Vet Services, to formally address the needs of senior pets. I had always offered end-of-life care, but formalized the service, making it much easier for pet parents to understand how I could help when their pets were aging and when they were nearing the end of their lives. Though I have never tallied up the number of animals I have euthanized over the years, I do remember many of the encounters I've had with people who were absolutely devastated in the very last moments they were spending with their beloved pet. Most think that those euthanasia appointments are the worst part of being a veterinarian. The responsibility for guiding families through the palliative care, the quality of life assessments, and then finally choosing to allow their pet to leave them in a kind, peaceful way is a tremendous responsibility. There are no other professions that routinely put humans in a position to legally take a life. From my earliest professional days, I knew this and accepted that the custom care provided to senior pets and their families invariably culminates in loss, very often in that final decision and procedure, euthanasia. The pressure to be skillful, compassionate, and have the ability to improvise is real. But rather than this being the hardest part of my job, I have found it to be one of the most rewarding pieces of my life as a veterinarian. being there for people in distress, giving the gift of a peaceful death to a beautiful animal who has given them all he or she can. I generally don't cry with my clients, but I do comfort and support them, validate their decisions to have their pet euthanized, and afterward I encourage them to take out their favorite pictures and write about their pets. Sometimes after we've finished and we're standing outside of my car, clients might want to cuddle with my dogs, who are always so sweet, allowing the person going through such a painful passage to cry more, or to laugh, or to dream again of parenting another animal. Once I had my Your Senior Pet Vets website up and running, I did a mailing out to the area vets informing them of the expanded reach of these mobile services, and many began referring their patients to me. I also got lots of word-of-mouth referrals from previous clients and friends who knew that I offered in-home and end-of-life and euthanasia services. The main challenge for me as a demand has grown is that it can be an unpredictable business. I get calls at all hours of the day and night during the week and on weekends. Usually euthanasia appointments can't be scheduled far in advance. On Friday night, I finally had sat down to tackle a large pile of records and invoices when I got a call from a distraught dog mom. She had been given my name earlier when the family golden retriever showed no signs of improvement after being diagnosed with a bleeding splenic rumor. Her college-age kids had come home to say goodbye, and though they thought their sweet dog Harley would make it to the morning, she had begun to deteriorate and was having some labored breathing. The woman tearfully apologized, saying that it would mean so much if I could come to their home for euthanasia rather than having to bring Harley to the emergency clinic. I'd been dreading making the decision, which is why I didn't call earlier. I'm sure it would have made it easier for you. It was late, but there was something about her anguished voice that made me say, I'll be there as soon as I can. With my supplies and a couple of small dogs loaded into the car, I plugged the address into the GPS and off I went. Upon my arrival, I found a beautiful family of five huddled around the sweet golden retriever who was definitely ready to move on. We'll make sure that Harley is comfortable and at peace, I promised quietly. It was heartbreaking. They were all crying as each of them said goodbye, and thank you for being the best dog ever. That Harley was one of those amazing all-around family dogs who was loved by all who knew her. The family's three sons moved into the back of my car so I could arrange for her cremation. A couple of years later, I was walking with my dogs down our street when a car stopped next to me. The woman introduced herself and proceeded to thank me again for being there for Harley that night and for her and her family. These are moments when former clients stop me on the street to say thank you for helping them during the most difficult times with their pets that make my job rewarding and reaffirm that my efforts have been a lasting impact on so many people whose paths have crossed mine. Out of my rounds on that particular day when I reminded myself that I wasn't going to be the one to find Piglet's adoptive future home, I knew there was an elephant in the living room, or rather a tiny pink tornado of a puppy who could neither see nor hear and who had stolen my heart. The clock was ticking. We couldn't keep putting off the inevitable. By the end of the day, the rain had subsided, the appointments had gone smoothly, and as special treat for Piglet, I decided to drop by Norwalk Veterinary Hospital Supplies and to say hi. The minute I got Peggy out of this little crate and bundled him into my arms, he knew exactly where he was and started sniffling madly in the exact direction of the side entrance he used before. Mr. Amazing, the urgent ping of a text message made me pause, hug the big baby, and glance down to see that Rachel's name had come up. Apparently, she had just heard that Piglet wasn't going to go to the Armstrongs. Please tell me that you aren't considering keeping him, Mommy. You can't have seven dogs. You can't. Please end the chaos, Mommy. That's it, I thought. I'm going home and I will read over everything and look closely at the latest candidate for Gloria and Caroline. But first, Piggy Lee was going to go see his best friend, Monica, not to mention Emily, and a growing number of female vet techs and assistants he was adding to his list of friends. We'd barely gotten to the door before Monica and Emily were at our sides, whisking Piglet away from me, both of them surrounding him in a cuddle that gave him a cradle as he dove headfirst into Emily's pocket for a treat, and then, munching still, flew up Monica's arm and down her shirt. As always, she chatted and sang to him a mix of Spanish, English, and gibberish, as she'd always had done. And I had taken a video of this. Now that he likes pocket diving, pretty soon he's going to outgrow shirt diving, Monica warned. He won't be a baby for too much longer. With that, Piglet poked his head out of her top and brought his nose right up to her mouth, inhaling her breath. See, I told you, she reminded me. It's the cilantro. Dr. Charlie Duffy, an animal whisperer, if there ever was one, dashed past us as he bid farewell to a canine patient eager to head home. Wow, he said, peering down to take a closer look at Piglet. He's doubled in size. It's hard to believe he's the same puppy. He seems so much happier. Monica walked Piglet and me toward the exit. Everything okay, Dr. Shapiro? She asked. She knew that we were running low on options for adoptive homes and could see what was happening. Absolutely, you just can't be too careful. Monica nodded in agreement and then shrugged, saying, and you know what? If you decide to keep him, there's nothing wrong with that. I love that she said it, but a big message flashed across my brain, the email I'd sent to Warren that read, Foster Project? I mumbled my appreciation and admitted it would be hard, but it would be for the best. Yeah, I'm sure, she agreed, though she didn't sound so sure. She handed Piglet back to me and gave me a last nose rub with her nose. But if you change your mind or you don't find the right place, don't stress. I got your back, girlfriend. Piglet didn't seem to pick up on any of my turbulent energy as I carried him out to the car. Why would he? In his scope of awareness, I'm certain he believed he was exactly where he was supposed to be, in my arms. And that's Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf-blind pink puppy and his family, by Melissa Shapiro. Next week, we'll read the next chapter about Piglet and what happens to him as he moves forward in the Shapiro household. Our next article is from Petspiration, a website on Yahoo. Why Dogs Tilt Their Heads and Other Adorable Science. Dogs have an extraordinary way of communicating with us, and one of the most endearing endeavors they exhibit is the infamous head tilt. You may have seen it when you call your dog's name, or perhaps when they hear a peculiar sound. But what's behind this charming quirk? Well, we'll delve into the science behind why dogs tilt their heads and explore some other fascinating canine behaviors. The science behind the head tilt? When your dog tilts his head, it often seems like they are trying to decipher what you're saying or trying to understand something puzzling in the environment. This adorable behavior is not just a show of cuteness. It has a scientific basis. Research suggests that dog tilting heads might enhance a dog's ability to hear and process sounds. Dogs have a keen sense of hearing, and tilting their head may help them pinpoint the direction of a noise more accurately. In essence, when they tilt their head, they adjust their ear position, allowing them to gather more auditory information and better understand the surroundings. Interestingly, though, studies show that the specific breeds are more prone to head tilting. Breeds known for their intelligence, such as the Border Collie and Poodle, tend to display the behavior more often. It's a charming reminder of how dogs adapt their communication skills to better connect with humans. Dogs and their connection to human emotions. One of the most remarkable aspects of a dog's behavior is the ability to read human emotions. Studies have shown that dogs are adept at interpreting human facial expression and vocal tone. This skill is likely a result of their long history of domestication and the close bond they share with humans. When a dog tilts its head while you're speaking, it's not just a cute gesture. It's often an indication that they're trying to engage your emotional state. Dogs are incredibly sensitive to the nuances of our voices. A higher pitched might signal excitement or happiness, while a deeper tone could indicate anger or sadness. But tilting their heads, dogs may be trying to figure out the best way to respond to us. The emotional intelligence is one of the reasons dogs are considered man's best friend. They provide comfort and companionship, often sensing when we need their support the most. Other adorable canine behaviors. The paw lift. Have you ever noticed your dog lifting a paw when they are curious or trying to communicate? This behavior indicates that they are unsure about something or trying to get your attention. It's a sweet way of saying, hey, look at me. What's going on? Then there's the wiggle dance. When you come home after a long day, your dog might greet you with an enthusiastic wiggle dance. This joyful display is a way for dogs to express their excitement and love for you. Their wag up the tail, bounce on the paw, and may even do a little spin. This behavior is a beautiful reminder of their loyalty and affection. And don't forget the long stare. Some dogs have a tendency to give you a long, intense stare. While this can feel a bit unnerving, it's usually the sign of trust and love. Dogs look to their owners for assurance, and maintaining eye contact can strengthen the bond between you and your furry friend. Understanding your dog's body language can help improve the relationship. Pay attention to their tail position, their ear movement, and the facial expression to better understand their importance and their emotions. All of this information comes from Petspiration, the website on Yahoo, and is about why dogs tilt their heads and other adorable science. Well, this information brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the articles, and I invite you back again for more information on the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until next time, this has been Joyce Vesper, your radio reading service volunteer for Sun Sounds of Arizona and for Animal Companions. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.